Welcome to the Loosema Podcast. I'm Charles Loosema. I'm heading out to Phase 1 right now. I got invited by email to go check out some of their cameras. They said they were going to do a one-on-one demo for me. And I think I mentioned this, or actually I didn't, but my gut reaction was to just respond back that I wasn't interested. I just bought a camera, the Sony A7R Mark II. But then I thought about it, and I was like, I caught myself mid email, and I was thinking, well, I mean, it couldn't hurt, right? Especially right now, since I'm experimenting and trying new things, and you know, really reading up and studying up on technology. I figured, what the hell? I know they're way out of my price range. I don't expect that. There's little possibility that I would walk out with a Phase 1 camera today. And I say that not even with the little slightest hesitation or even slightest bit of, being tempted. I'm not. I have no real interest in them. If it weren't for the fact that they emailed me, I wouldn't even be going out there. What I am interested in is to see what technologies that they're, what fronts, you know, what battles they're fighting right now. So back when I had a Hasselblad, it was a 31 megapixel H3D2. So it was the Mark II of their H3D. Now I think they're up to the H5D, maybe even an H5D2. I haven't even checked in the last 5-6 years. So when I had my Hasselblad, it was, I think the Phase 1s were up to 45, maybe even 50. Well, actually they don't do even numbers. They do like 35, 45. I think they skipped 55 and they went up to 65. They might've had a 65 by the time my ownership of the Hasselblad ended. And of course the Hasselblads, So the Phase 1s did 35, 45, 55. And I think the Hasselblads were like, mine was 31. I think there was like a P40, No, those are the Phase 1 backs. Sorry, I'm just confusing myself now. I don't know what Hasselblad had, but it didn't have nearly as many megapixels as the Phase 1s back in the day. Both cameras were, what fronts were they fighting? I mean, they were high resolution cameras, but with very, very low range and very low ability to stretch into the low noise range when you went up into ISO, like any sort of high ISO performance. These cameras didn't have these. The cameras were notoriously slow, and like they'd only, like my Hasselblad only took pictures at one frame a second. Actually, I'm not even sure if it could do one frame a second. So versus like the, say, 10 and 12 frames that your Nikons and Canons can do at the top line, the Phase 1s and the Hasselblads are really, really slow. And I mean, they were typically known to be studio cameras or professional grade commercial use cameras, but I just don't know what kind of battles that they're fighting right now, what they try to achieve. So I'm very curious. I would like to know what they've got to offer. I would like to know how well it compares to the Sony A7 R Mark II. That's why I brought mine today. I want to see how they stack up. I want to take a look at some of the files. Yeah, and while I rarely ever pixel peep, I want to check it out and see, you know, at that level, what are you getting over an A7 R Mark II? And then, of course, lastly, being that Phase One is the maker of Capture One, I would love to see how they use Capture One. I'm starting to get the hang of Capture One, especially with more so the file, kind of the file system, and how they import and create files and create folders and stuff. But I'm sure within like 5-10 minutes, I could glean a lot more from just talking to a Capture One representative or a phase one rep. Anyhow, so that's really all there is. I mean, I don't have much to say. This is kind of me going in blind, me going in because I'm curious. And for no other reason than I just want to know. I just want to see what's on the other side of the, you know, on the other side of the mountain. So I'll let you guys know when I finish that meeting, and hopefully I'm not disappointed, or hopefully I do have something to report. I'm just going to switch gears and talk quickly about the drone, since I've had it now for a few days. I just got the Phantom 4. Again, that's a DJI product. I just got an email right now that says the Phantom 4 there is now on sale for like $1,200 over at Adorama, which is, or B&H rather, which is $200 than the price that was originally advertised when I got mine. I didn't buy it through B&H or Adorama. I got it locally from some guy who was selling his. So the price doesn't really, I didn't pay that price anyway, but it surely will drive down the prices of all Phantom 4s right now. I'm assuming that they're probably going to release a Phantom 4, like an upgraded version of that, you know, that model. So in preparation of that release, they probably want to make sure that they drop the price of the regular Phantom 4 so that they can put the new Phantom 4 at the old price. You know, just a sales tactic. But I was flying around my house today. I only got out to like 2,000 feet from me, which is not that far. It's less than half a mile. What I've noticed is that the signal for the drone is quite weak in areas that are heavily populated. So radio transmitter boosters are probably in the cards for me, trying to figure out how do I increase the signal so that I don't lose connection with the drone. Fortunately for people who, you know, people who have the drones know, but the drones have a return to home feature where if you lose connection, or if it if it can't register your inputs, it'll just come home. So fortunately there's always a failsafe that you can that will automatically activate if it goes out of range. So which is to say, most of the time you'll probably get your drone back. Of course, if you fly it out past where it can possibly return, meaning that like it doesn't have enough juice, enough batteries to come back, then you're shit out of luck. So something that I don't recommend. And in fact, the on-screen display is actually very good at telling you, hey, look, you've only got enough to make it back, so you better start heading back now. So they really thought about a lot in the software and in the development of the software, and it actually will tell you what distance that the drone is to you, so that you can kind of keep track of how far you can or cannot fly. What else? I got a few batteries for the drone just to make sure that, you know, charging takes an hour and you only get 20 minutes flight. So there's about 40 minutes disparity, not to mention there's a little bit of what I would call, I don't know, you can't charge it immediately. You can't charge the battery immediately after flying because it's a little too hot. So the charger actually won't let you charge the battery. So I don't know what you call that time, downtime or like whatever. It's impossible it basically doesn't work out to be exactly an hour, you know, between flying and charging to full. It's probably, you know, you fly for 20 minutes, you gotta take the battery out for like maybe 15 minutes, 20 minutes to let it cool down, and then you charge it another hour. So at first glance, four batteries might be overkill, but four batteries will get you an hour and 20, which is about the amount of time that the first battery should be finished charging once it goes onto the charger. Actually, that's not even true, is it? Because if you have four batteries and you take the first one out and that one's going to charge, you've only got an hour flight time left. And you've got an hour and 20 to wait. So actually, you need five batteries. Five batteries to stay up in the air constantly. Well, you know, you have to bring it down and take out the battery, but basically, as far as flight time is concerned, you would theoretically need 5 batteries to be in the air most of the time, you know, outside of just swapping the batteries. What else? I'm kind of messing around with the video settings. I don't know if you guys saw the video that I put in the other, on Facebook, Instagram the other day, where I was circling my little girl's tricycle back in the out in the tennis court. So there are a couple features that work really well. Now I'm testing the camera features. I'm going to test their HDR. I mean, basically, look, this camera, the camera that's on the Phantom 4 is a camera that you can't change the lens for. It's a hard-mounted camera. You can't change the lens, and there's nothing else you can really do. Like, unlike some of the other drones that you're allowed to change out, for example, it's a GoPro, or you can mount something else onto it, the Phantoms have opted to, or DJI has opted to, mount a camera that is their own. So I guess, you know, to vertically integrate all the different components. So, and also, I mean, it makes it much more streamlined in, as far as, you know, production, and as far as keeping the costs low, and as far as actually increasing profit margin, because they can source these cameras much cheaper than whatever you would get them for outside, especially if it's another company that makes a product. So anyway, the point is, DJI has integrated this camera and the gimbal into the drone, but that also means that there's no option to change it out. There's no option to say, currently, as far as I know, I can't even find an option to change the focal length of the lens. The effective focal length of this lens is about 35 millimeter, which is fine for kind of semi-wide angle viewing. But if you want to do anything that's a little bit more telephoto, you're out of luck. There isn't a 50 millimeter option, which I would love to see. And certainly no, like, portrait or higher telephoto angle, or rather focal length. So, yeah, there's no like 85 or 105 millimeters. And certainly I don't even think those would be useful, or that useful, because when you're flying this thing, there's some margin of error in the controls. So it isn't that it allows us, there is no second operator function or allowance where you can have someone else just control the camera. And even if you could, I suspect that even though this camera's, or the drone is fairly stable, that you wouldn't be able to control it well enough to sustain or maintain the flight so that it could be that, you know, that stable. I mean, at 85, it's fairly fairly pulled in, like zoomed in. So there's going to be a little bit of a challenge to even keep it still. And then, of course, with the lack of second operator ability, you're not going to really be able to use it. So 50, 35... I mean, I've never tried the 50. The 35 seems actually very, very natural. But I would love to see a 50 option at some point in the future. DJI has also several other more advanced and more professional offerings. They have the Inspire 1, which is their... it's probably their pro camera or drone. Or pro drone with a camera on it. And they now have this thing called the Zen Muse, which is their interchangeable lens and changeable camera. I guess it's a changeable camera. I actually think once you mount it on, I don't think it's, you're not like swapping it out or anything. You're just swapping out the lenses. So I'm interested in seeing what kind of lenses they come out with this system in the future. But it's not mountable for the Phantom 4. Phantom 4 is more of a prosumer, consumer type product. It's got a fixed lens, fixed camera. Albeit the camera's fairly good. It records in 12 megapixels and actually shoots raw. So for what it's worth, but here's the thing, is it's not a full frame lens or camera. It's not a full frame sensor. So it's a crop factor. In fact, I'm not even sure if it's, I think it's 1.5. Okay, yeah, so it's your APS-C form crop factor, so it's, you know, like 2/3, I think, of a full frame, which does really well. I mean, Canons and Nikons thrive on 2/3 APS-C, and you know, there are a whole host of cameras. Like my Sony NEX-7 used to be a crop factor as well. So crop factor doesn't mean it's bad, but it certainly doesn't have the focal lengths, kind of the one-to-one, you know, if you stick a 35 millimeter, it's a 35 millimeter focal length. Because of the crop factor, you're multiplying it by 1.5 in this case. So the actual lens that's on there is like 20-something millimeters, 23 or something, and then multiplied by the 1.5 crop factor, you get about 35 millimeters. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see what they'll do in the future. The drone at $1,200 now is, you know, limited to what it's capable of doing. It's not able to fly that far. I've just learned today, like, you can fly about 2,000 feet before it loses signal, and you know, you got to bring it back. But I'm testing out the camera. I'm testing out the video. The video actually looks really crisp. I've never shot 4K, and even when I was doing videos, I was actually, usually I think I was only shooting 720 because I was shooting the Canon 7D Mark I, and that was a couple years ago. And if I wanted 60 frames per second, I had to shoot it in 720. It wasn't capable of doing 60 frames per second at 1080. The Phantom 4 right now has a camera that can do 4K at 30 frames per second, which is not your more cinematic 23 or 24 frame per second frame rate, but it does really well. It looks really good, and unless you're trying to slow it down for slow motion type work, you probably won't need more than 30 frames a second. I've read that you can, I mean, it has the HDR function, which is basically, I think it tries to auto compose or auto composite two pictures together, one of a higher exposure, one of a lower exposure. I'm not sure if it's taking more than two pictures and combining them. I mean, that feature is on the iPhone or Androids, I'm assuming, as well. So that's nothing new, but it's interesting that it's built in. Yeah, it shoots raw. 12 megapixels. I think the ISO goes up to about 1600. I don't know if it's that clean. I haven't tested it kind of darker. But what I do know is that it's a fairly capable camera. So I'm very much looking forward to trying it out and seeing what I can do with it with a little bit less light. During the day, of course, it works fine. Yeah, and I don't know what the files look like, and I don't know how they'll render on my computer. So we'll have a look. Anyway, what else? Not a whole lot. I mean, it's just, I'm just testing right now, and I'm awaiting one more thing. Haven't mentioned it really, but I kind of alluded to it the other day, but I'm going to wait until I get it, or I take reception of it before I talk about it. But yeah, these things are real exciting, whether it's cameras or gimbals or, you know, drones or software even. It's just it's a brave new world, you know. There's a lot of things going on, and I mean, it's quite exciting. I mean, there's just so much. If you asked me 4 or 5 years ago if I'd believe that we'd be sitting in, I'd be sitting in my all electric car talking about how I was able to fly my drone that had a built-in camera with a, you know, with a 12 megapixel raw sensor on there, and then be able to fly it out and just, like, right out of the box, totally fully capable, you know, nothing to add on or modify or, you know, to customize. And then you tell me that I'd be shooting a 42 megapixel full frame consumer. I'd probably call it a prosumer camera, because I don't think of the A7 series as a professional line of cameras, given that they have their own alpha, like the Alpha 77s or whatnot, as more of their kind of, you know, interchangeable SLR system. So I don't think of the A7R as a professional level camera or professional grade camera. Like, it's not weatherproof. It doesn't have does it have magnesium alloy? I'm not sure. Anyway, the point is, it's a 42 megapixel camera squished into a tiny ass body. And you tell me that Canon has a 50 megapixel full frame sensor that rivals those of the Phase 1s and Hasselblads. I wouldn't know exactly what to say, because I'm not sure that I would believe it. Point is, things have come a long way in the last couple years. It's actually shocking how much things have changed. So anyway, it's exciting. I'll talk to you guys all soon, though. Soon as I come back from Phase 1. So thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you guys all soon. Peace.